it is 50-50 football, but a little bit delayed this week because the football just didn't seem to stop. And in fact, I think it's about to start again. I don't know quite what's happened, John, in that it feels as though somehow there's suddenly a Premier League game every day.
Yeah, it's like when you play intramural football at university and the pitches are all bad in December, so like you're playing twice back-to-back in May to try and get it all in, and you're trying to figure out who you haven't played yet.
Yeah, yeah, the spreadsheet's a nightmare. That thing where they're meant to like grey out the boxes in the middle because you can't play yourself, somehow someone has.
And we probably got beat.
Indeed. So we're sort of cobbling things together as we go. There'll be a show preview in the weekend, but the weekend appears to start in about 20 minutes. So we're going to work all this out. But there was a massive win over the weekend. The biggest win over the weekend, I would argue, was on Saturday night. Not least because of the second biggest win is arguably the one which preceded it, which was Sunderland beating Hull at Hull's own ground, taking Marco Silva's unbelievable record from him. And then Swansea stepped up, and we're joined by Gito Clewellyn, because Swansea stepped up. That's the thing to say, isn't it, Gito?
It is. It is. After, you know, wondering, you know, what kind of finale to the season we were going to get. Somehow, with two games left, we've got our destiny in our own hands, really, which is more than we could have possibly asked for prior to the weekend. Like you said, how with a game at home against Sunderland. I mean, if ever there was a nailed on 3 points, it was that for Hull. So when the results started coming through and saying that actually Sunderland had taken the lead, the scenes in the pubs of Swansea before our game against Everton were absolutely incredible. I cannot actually remember the last time like a game which didn't involve the Swans got that kind of reaction in the pubs in Swansea. Everybody just lost their mind over it. And then, you know, obviously that was such an unexpected result, and it put everybody in the perfect mood then going into the match. And we know what happened next.
No, I mean, in terms of the, me and Neil were just wishing we were in that pub now. We're always chasing a brilliant, quite a night out that we're not quite on, and that feels like that was it at 4 o'clock on a Saturday.
Yeah, anything that can be described as scenes is indeed, I think, what I live for, Gito. You know, the idea of scenes is the most exciting thing in the world, and yeah, it is this sort of. I mean, the first thing I was thinking in that scenario is, you know, imagine what the dressing room's like. And it must have been, you know, the Swansea dressing room must have been a ridiculous place in terms of they themselves will have had their own scenes moments. But then they've also got their own moments of, oh, now the pressure's really on as well. And I think that's, you know, at times there was all the pictures last night and the stories last night from how upset the Middlesbrough players were. And I think we at times sort of slightly steal humanity from our footballers a little bit, but that, you know, we've all been in dressing rooms at any level, and we know that will have just been a really complex place all of a sudden with those players. Some of them will have been absolutely bouncing, some of them would have been a bit more worried, some of them would have felt the pressure, but they went out and got the result.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I can't possibly have had a negative effect on them. It must have just been that unexpected boost, and it seemed from the way they played against Everton, like they said, all right, we've got that in the that one's in the bag. Now let's go out and take advantage of it. And that's what they did. It was a professional performance. I think that's how you sum it up, really. It wasn't the best game. There weren't too many chances for either side, really. But Swansea defended well. They handled Everton pretty well. I thought they limited their chances. And, you know, the one of the few big chances which fell Swansea's way, Llorente took it. It was, again, not the cleanest header. I think it went in off his shoulder in the end, but one goal was enough. And it was all just about getting those 3 points and retaking the advantage in the relegation battle.
Yeah, it's 13 now for Llorente, isn't it? Which is a brilliant return. And I noticed there was a bit, he was asked a bit about recent comments about Frank Lampard, give about how much running about he was doing or not. I mean, one thing that Llorente pointed out, which I think's quite an interesting thing based on, you know, just a few conversations I've heard recently talk about footballers, is that a lot of the times they play when they're not quite right and they get themselves onto the pitch, and you can almost be criticised for being too honest, and there'll be players who go, no, if I'm not 100% fit, I'm not playing, and there'll be ones who try and get on the pitch, and if you do and you don't make a big fuss out of it, it sort of feels like you're there to be criticised for maybe not being able to get around the pitch as well as you can. Do you think that's sort of what's happened here?
Yeah, definitely. I think we were too desperate. Well, I wouldn't say too desperate because we're extremely reliant on Llorente. It's no coincidence that our dip in form after Clement's fantastic initial results came as Llorente got injured and then struggled to regain fitness. And we did try and rush him back when he wasn't in any way fit. And I think it was, the statistic was that he'd sprinted, I think, 20 metres or something like that against Watford. But in truth, he was playing with one ankle. You know, he wasn't capable of sprinting on it. And we were just trying to force him to play, really, when he wasn't fit. But, you know, that highlights how reliant we are on him. But he does seem to have regained that fit. Well, I don't know if he's quite fully fit yet, even. But he's able to get about the pitch a lot more, and he's looking far more comfortable now just when we really need him. And over the last few games, we've seen the difference. You know, when he plays well, the Swans can function. You know, he just links everything up. He gives us that focal point, something to aim for up front, and a real direction. It gives our attacks direction, really. And we definitely saw that against Manchester United in the last game, and I think we saw it against Everton too. You know, people think everything just went through him, and it paid in the end with the priceless winning goal. And he has been fantastic this season. He's been absolutely brilliant for us. One of the few players who's been consistently performing throughout the season.
Going, you know, talking about his consistent performance through the scene, and I think it's important sometimes that supporters get the opportunity to stick up for players in that context, because it's something which, you know, it's an easy line for Lampard to trot out, but not least because he can back it up with the stats, and so therefore, you know, he feels as though he's got something in there. But in general, there's a number of players who certainly since January, they have just been doing the business. And I think that's, you know, they've been doing the business up to a level which is, you know, 14th to 9th in the league, if you know what I mean. And I think that's something which goes sort of unstated here, is the distance that Swansea have actually come from where they were to have it in their own hands with two games to go.
Yeah, it's easy to forget. I think because Swansea were outside the relegation zone not too long ago and then fell back into it, maybe that gets overlooked. But of course, when Bob Bradley was sacked, I think we had 12 points, you know, just before the turn. Well, I think we had 12 points on New Year's Day, which, you know, teams don't really survive from that kind of position. And you know, Hull deserve a lot of praise too, because they've turned around a similar way and, you know, had both of our teams performed half as well as this in the first half of the season, then we wouldn't be where we are at the moment. But it has been an incredible turnaround. And to think, really, that we were only just in double digits at the turn of the year, and now with two games to go, we're in the mid-30s and with, you know, control of our own fate, then it's a staggering turnaround, really. And it's down to management and players, really. Players have upped their game. We've brought a few we've made a few improvements to the squad too, of course, in January. But generally, everybody around the club has pulled together just when we needed it.
Yeah, and you talk about pulling together, and I know the players are paying for the tickets for the fans on the weekend, which is a really nice touch, isn't it? You know, it still is quite a lot of money all added up. You could say, you know, how much footballers earn and things like that, but paying for 3,000 people's, you know, match tickets, you know, kind of does add up, really, and it just shows that they feel that, you know, that the fans can really make a difference for them at Sunderland.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody needed to know how important this game in Sunderland is, that's what sums it up, really. I think we've heard that it was Liam Britton's idea to he got all the players together and asked, right, what can we do? Made a few calls with the club and found and suggested that the players all chip in. I think it works out it's a 25-man squad, so the ticket's going to cost them about £3,000 each, which even on a footballer's wage, you know, it's not an insignificant amount of money, and it's a great gesture. It's going to ensure that we have a sellout in the away end, and you know, anybody who looks at a map can see that Swansea to Sunderland is a heck of a journey. It's the longest away game of the season. It's been kept alive. I think I'm going up on the buses. We're leaving Swansea at about 5 o'clock. on Saturday morning, and it's about 7 hours on the bus up to.
I think you're leaving on Friday night. I'm going to be quite clear with you. I think you're leaving on Friday night. I think that should be the general attitude for everyone.
It is really. I don't know how much sleep I'm actually going to get on Friday night, but it's, you know, it should be great. There should be a massive convoy going up to the northeast. And there should be a fantastic atmosphere on the way end, and that's, you know, that's what you need really at this stage of the season. In fairness, down at Liberty on Saturday, it was the best atmosphere we've had in years, probably. It was absolutely bouncing. I was speaking to quite a few Everton fans after that, and they said, "Wow, you know, they were kind of in awe. Really, they didn't quite expect that kind of atmosphere, despite this being in our current position." So, hopefully, we can replicate that to some extent up in Sunderland, and just give them that little bit of support they need. And every, you know, at this stage of the season, every little helps. And if a couple of thousand extra fans going up to Sunderland can help get that massive 3 points, then it'll be worth it.
It now looks like a scenario where 6 points feels remarkably viable, like almost to a manner, to an extent which, you know, for a certain type of supporter, it would almost be concerning how viable the sort of the 6 points looks. You know, Sunderland away. Yeah, they've had the surprise win against Hull. Maybe you can expect them to attack a little bit more with the pressure off. That might actually be no bad thing. Look to pick them off on the break and scrap right the way through. And then West Brom at home, who I went to the Hawthorns last season, last game of the season for West Brom versus Liverpool, and it was a game. I think Liverpool had the Europa League final midweek and made a ton of changes, and West Brom were quite on the beach, and they should, if anything, be more on the beach this time round. It's, you know, the only thing that would worry me in a sense from a Swansea perspective, whilst it is in your own hands, there is that, you know, Hull have got two games that could have a similar vibe. Last season, Newcastle battered a relegated Newcastle battered Spurs last day, and Spurs are likely to be in a bit of a funny place, I think, starting from next weekend now, and Crystal Palace away as well. You know, what I'm trying to drive at here, I think, Guito, is I think 6 points, it might have to be 6 points.
Well, there's so many different, you know, possible outcomes. The main thing is that we beat Sunderland on Saturday. And you're right in what you're saying. You're on paper, you wouldn't really want, you couldn't really ask for two better fixtures than what we've got. We've got Sunderland, who are already relegated, and West Brom, who've been safe forever, and they've been on the beach for the last few weeks. But of course, football isn't that simple. You would have thought that Sunderland would have gone to Hull and rolled over on Saturday, but they really upped their game by all accounts, and that's how they got the 3 points against Hull. You know, they're not going to be the pushovers that probably we thought they were going to be before last weekend. So we've still got to show them respect, because obviously if we lose to Sunderland, then advantage shifts back to Hull, and they have the chance to leap out the relegation zone themselves. The other side of that is if we can get the 3 points against Sunderland, then that puts a whole ton of pressure on Hull going into the match on Sunday. It also forces Palace to raise their game, because that would mean that they weren't mathematically safe either.
Yep.
So Sunderland is just a huge game. It will have a massive bearing on who goes down and who stays up, in my opinion. And hopefully we can just put all that pressure on Hull on Saturday, and then midday on Sunday we can all sit down and pray that it doesn't go to the last day, and that the final day on West Brom can just be a bit of a celebration.
I mean, Geeta, you've nearly got me going to Sunderland on Saturday off the back of this, to be honest with you, mate.
What time do we have to go to Swansea to get to Newcastle, do you think? Because I'm going on the bus.
Yeah, I'm going on Geeta's bus. There's no other way I'm going. That's the way in which it works. Listen, it's always fantastic to speak to you, Geeta, and we'll do more of this sort of thing, I suspect, one way or another next week. Me and John are talking in the office about our number of callers who've got something at stake, apart from the Stoke lads who are perpetually angry. Small ones and small ones down for 50-50 football. But thanks so much for your call, and we're probably going to move across now. We're going to move across to Stoke, Sean.
Yeah.
Oh, we love the Stoke lads. Basically, hang on for a second, then they'll be Stoke. and over to Stoke. And Stoke are, I'm almost tempted. Got Elliot Hackney from Bear Pit TV. And Elliot, I'm not going to lie to you. I might well find a way to do a PhD dissertation around the Stoke supporters' mentality. Because it's endlessly fascinating, I think, at the minute, what's happening in the Premier League. In the way in which, you know, certain clubs just find themselves in a little bit of a rut and can't find a route out, really, which is particularly clean. And that's what's happened to Stoke this season, is that, you know, me and John often make jokes about Stoke Twitter, because there's loads of different opinions, there's loads of different discussion, but there isn't a lot of people having very much fun. Is that fair?
This has been no fun whatsoever. It's coming out in a lot of people's views now, and on the pages that we do. You know, we put out a couple of polls recently about if people still want Mark Hughes at the club, and the majority of fans are done with him. I think it's time for him to go. We see Mbeumo nowhere near the squad after he spent $18 million on him. We see Hossley and Bojan, who over 90 minutes are our best strikers, not even playing for us at the minute. They're off scoring against Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, which is right laugh. and we're struggling for Bojan, who the rest of the season seems like a fitness exercise for him. He hasn't scored yet. He played the last 6 or 7 games. He was dropped weekend because he was ill, but that was the only reason he was dropped. And we had Mamadou Diouf up there, who's been playing right back for the rest of the season. So a lot of people are questioning Hughes at the moment, and a lot, you know, when fans are unhappy, a lot more of his decisions are coming under scrutiny. And it's a really tough one at the minute, because if we end the season badly, it will be interesting to see how Peter Coates handles that.
Just on this, just want to, because Stoke have been where they've been for as long as they have. I mean, people might not be entirely aware, because it's not a fix. At the minute, you don't look out for Stoke's score. I'll be dead honest with you, but I do because of you people. But you know, I'll just go through. I'll run them through since the start of April. 2-0 defeat away at Leicester. 1-0 defeat away at Burnley. 2-1 defeat to Liverpool at home. 3-1 win against Hull. Which effectively guaranteed that Stoke would stay up. 2-0 defeat against Swansea, 0-0 draw against West Ham at home, and then at the weekend there's the 2-2 draw with Bournemouth. And the point of all this is that this is not just of these bad results, but the football's turgid, and you know it isn't as though there's a couple in there where, you know, a draw's been snatched from the jaws of defeat or anything like that. It's very much been there's just 11 lads who all seem relatively interchangeable as far as you're concerned, running around on a pitch and playing for Stoke, but there's the collective just feels as though there's such little riding on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the song's been ripped out. There's no drive, there's no passion. And it is like, I know it's a cliche, but it's like a lot of them are just on holiday at the minute or just want this season to end. There's a little bit of disharmony between the squad at the minute. And the decisions that Mark Hughes is making, when we are crying out for some flair, some sort of excitement football, is Ramadan Sobhi. He came into the squad when Shaqiri was injured, and he was playing the match 2 or 3 games in a row. And he's this young Egyptian lad, he's talented. The head on his shoulders, way above what age it should be. He plays like a very mature, he tracks back, he works hard. At the same time, he's skillful, tricky. And then he's exiled again. He hasn't even featured in the past couple of games. None of us can get a head around this decision. There's some talks, some rumours that it might have been a signing by Mark Cartwright, it wasn't even a huge signing, and the stubborn way that Hughes is, that maybe he doesn't want this lad to succeed, as it wasn't a decision that he made. But it's just baffling. And football, as you say, we're watching every week, it's just dire. It's dire to watch, it's awful.
The thing, John, I'll go to you on this, because we watched at the weekend, you know, people listening to this know we support Liverpool, obviously, and at the weekend we watched Southampton come to Anfield, and Southampton are 10th, they were on 41 points before the balls kicked, they've still got 4 games left to play after the Liverpool game, and one of the things that I was surprised by, and I think that there's a couple of similarities here, was just the, yes, they got themselves a point and they had to fight hard for it, and this isn't a conversation around that, but why there wasn't a desire to test themselves and have a bit more of a go. Why there wasn't a desire to actually play some football. Instead, it looked as though it was a practice run for shutting games down going into next season, if you know what I mean, because that's the only real positive for it. I do worry a little bit for this. You know, there's going to form a bank of sides who are more than capable of stopping teams from playing, more than capable of getting to 40 points, but have got no real plan to, for instance, break 55.
Yeah.
Yeah. You do see a couple of that with Tony Pulis as well. His team's renowned for getting to the 40-point mark, and then that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I think Southampton are in a slightly different position in that I think they've just struggled for goals all year, and I think there's an interesting rivalry developed between Southampton and Liverpool because we've taken so many players off them, basically. And I think that was kind of a strange one. I mean, the reaction to the penalty save was like it was a cup final, wasn't it? In terms of, I think they just sort of like doing one over us, and I think they're probably proud of the record against us, certainly this season, where we haven't managed to score against them. But I think generally speaking, I think you are right, and it's funny that the teams don't look to take a few more risks when they can, and I don't know whether it's because every position in the league's worth so much money, and so they're just playing it safe in terms of, well, if I can get a point there, then I'll do it. But I feel for Stoke fans, really, because it all seems so exciting fairly recently. You know, there was the statistic where they had more Champions League winners than anyone else in the squads and things like that. And it wasn't all defenders. It was an exciting attacking talent. And, you know, what's happened to the Bojan situation is absolutely crazy. You know, he's a player I would have had at Liverpool, and suddenly, you know, he can't get in the Stoke team. It just doesn't seem right in terms of those of us who've watched him play there, and for what the Stoke fans were saying to you who watch him week in, week out. And so it's must be frustrating to think, well, we sacked a manager who we knew what he was about, and someone in Pulis who, you know, they decided to move away from and get these attacking players in, and so to not kind of get that. And I don't think Stoke fans are asking for too much when they just say we just want something a little bit different now. And we've sort of mentioned to Elliot before about the feeling that you're just watching the same season over and over again, and kind of what that does to a support. And, you know, it'd be interesting because people might think it's Stoke fans being spoiled, Elliot. You know, you remember, you know, when you weren't in the Premier League, and now you're kind of moaning about mid-table kind of obscurity. But it's more than that, isn't it? It's what you kind of want to see from your team.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know if you heard, but I was on the radio having a go at Robbie Savage.
Great stuff, love it.
On 606 a couple of weekends ago, and he was obviously back in there. One of his mates, ex-manager, fellow Welshman, Mark Hughes.
Yeah.
But I was saying it's not about the position. I aren't moaning about us being in, 13th, 12th, wherever we are at the minute. It's the football that we're being subjected to, and the direction that we seem to be heading. I've got no problems with finishing ninth. You know, if we had like a decent cup run or something else to be excited about. But this season, there's been literally nothing. We went out of the FA Cup in the first round, the Capital One Cup in the first round. And after that, Mark Hughes said, OK, we're aiming for seventh, eighth, something to try and lift fans again. But at the minute, he's failing at his own targets. And like the football that we saw when Bojan, Arnautovic, Shaqiri, we were all doing so well, and we were playing when we were dubbed Stoke Alona against when we beat Man City, Man United, Chelsea, Everton 4-3. We wouldn't have these expectations if Mark Hughes hadn't shown us the football that we know the team could play. He's an architect of his own downfall.
On that point to a certain extent, I mean, is there an argument that if you're Hughes, it's almost difficult to keep going to that particular well as well? I mean, let's sort of stick up for him in that sense, which is, you know, he's been working with this group of players now for only so long. We see, I think, a lot of prevalence across all European football that managers do good work in 3-year cycles, that there is sort of the idea that something comes to an end, and it can be quite difficult maybe to keep things fresh and keep things ticking over when there isn't a big enough carrot, is what I'm saying. You know, there's the carrot of, for instance, if breaking into the top six feels like it's a viable thing, that's completely different to the idea of, well, you know, at this stage of the season, you know, in February, the best that can be hoped for is eighth. Sixth and eighth, there's a world between them in both a footballer's mindset and also, I suspect, in a supporter's mindset. So I do wonder whether or not it is maybe just a season. It could simply be that Hughes' time is just simply up. He can't do much more with these players, and we're back to the old line that you can get rid of one manager, but you can't get rid of 20 players. Or it might be that they just need this season to end, everyone to have a break, clear their heads, and then start next season and maybe find a way to start it a bit better, which has been an ongoing weakness and criticism I know that you've all had. And then start it a bit better, and then when there is a bit of a good run, it could be that throws into contention some sort of ongoing purpose for the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of factors when you do think about, okay, let's have another summer with Mark Hughes. There's a number of factors what do strike some worry in you. And the one of those is how much will Peter Coates giving to spend after he's, you know, there's talk from all the local papers saying, okay, Mark Hughes is going to be given so much money to rebuild his squad in the summer. He built that squad. He brought an 89 employee. He brought Bojan, Hossler. He got Boney in on loan. It's nowhere. These are all players that he got in. He's rebuilding his own squad.
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, let's see how this starts next season. It doesn't work well for Mark Hughes. It starts for any season. We usually don't win a game for 6-7 at the start. So if he goes into the next season and we have a similar start to that, I think Mark Hughes will be under so much pressure and he'll have to go anyway. The fans will be calling, some fans are calling for his head now. We go into the season, he has a start like every other one he has done in his time at Stoke. I can't see him being here much longer.
Okay, huge thanks to Elliot. Always good to speak to him about what's happening there. And check out the Bear Pit TV if you're interested in all things Stoke, almost as much as me and John are, which is the answer, which is quite a lot. And we're going to, on 50-50 Football, speak to someone from outside the Premier League, but not for much longer. John will be sorting that out now. Thank you very much indeed to Elliot, and we'll pass ourselves along. Joined now by True Faith's editor, Michael Martin, who is presumably a very, very, very happy man. Promotion boxed off, Premier League football next season, Rafa Benitez in charge, and champions. Why are you champions? As long as you say, that's why we're champions at some point.
Well, we got more points than anyone else.
Oh, that'll do it. Goals. That'll do it.
That's where Liverpool been going wrong, John. go on, in all seriousness, the whole season, I mean, it's a funny campaign. It goes on forever, the championship. It's like the Battle of the Somme. Everyone's just got to get through the other side and come out of it alive, ideally. And Newcastle have very much done that. But for me, the turning point is what I thought was the equalising goal's mad. But I watched Newcastle go to Brighton and they were much the better side. Brighton weren't interested, I felt, and they got 1-0 up and they were just hanging on for dear life. But I thought you saw in that game that Newcastle are a better team than Brighton in most areas of the pitch, and I think Brighton have had a very, very good season, you know, full credit to them. But Newcastle, whenever I've sort of caught even patches of games, even if the result hasn't gone for them, to me they've looked the best team in the championship.
Yeah, well, we are. You know, it's I think we have been, I'm not sure if we've been the best team all of the time. There are some good sides in the championship. I think some people, you know, being guilty of this myself, and you know, I still regard Newcastle United as a Premier League club in every way should be. Other than this season, and when we got relegated, of course. But there are some good sides who play decent football, not to be sniffed at, you know. So I would say Fulham are probably the best footballing team that we played this season. They absolutely stuffed us at St James's Park. They were much the better team. Tactically, their movement, their passing, their touch was excellent. Sheffield Wednesday as well, they beat us home and away. They were a very, very aggressive team. And sometimes I think, you know, they might have lost players to red cards in the Premier League, where it's a little bit more protective of players. But they were a good side. I actually think Huddersfield are a really good footballing team. You know, they're not a, you know, keep the ball a hell of a lot. And I actually think Brighton are probably a better team in terms of how they play. But in terms of the squad, I think we've had the best squad. So when we've lost players to injury or suspension, etc., we've had somebody to come in who been able to do a decent job and keep us in the game, keep us winning, collecting points, etc. And whereas I think sometimes the likes of Fulham, Sheffield Wednesday, Huddersfield, etc., Reading, they haven't had that. So Rafa's had built a squad to get out the championship. You know, the football hasn't always been pretty. I don't think anyone would doubt that. Overall, it's been highly effective, and some of the things that have been said about the team over the year, like, oh well, they don't score enough goals, but we scored more than anyone else. I think we should play two up front. Well, we scored more than anyone else. Just let Rafa get on with it, you know. So, and we're looking a little bit wobbly in midfield and in defence. well, we haven't let as many in as anyone else. So, you know, the facts speak for themselves. And it's as long as I've been going to watch Newcastle play, we've always been a reasonably strong side at home. So, you know, we've always had that kind of fortress St James's mentality. And where we've let, probably why we haven't won anything is because we've been weak away from home. And this season, Rafa's broke a club record. We've won 14 away games, you know. So that's a club record. That says everything about how he set the team up, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned the fortress in James's Park, and I think it's worth pointing out that the role that the fans have played in the promotion as well. You know, the number of season tickets that were sold before a ball had even been kicked, and the support, what I've seen from Newcastle every home game, has been fantastic. And it's the easiest thing in the world, isn't it, to go down and sulk about it and feel like, you know, the championship's, you know, beneath you and things
Norwich.
Like that. You know, or just sort of, you know, look for people to blame, and I'm sure, you know, that there's stuff like that going on in the pubs, but in the ground, the support for the team's been absolutely fantastic all year, hasn't it?
Yes and no. There's been a lot of kind of hand wringing about support this season amongst us, you know. So yeah, I kind of doubt the numbers have been good, haven't they? You know, so I mean, you know, people scrabbling around, standing outside the Gallagher on Sunday, asking for spares for Barnsley at home. You know, where else would that happen? You know,
yeah.
There's been, you know, tickets sold out. Took 5,000 away to Cardiff on a Friday night on the telly. You know, from Newcastle is a tiny, it's a decent hike, isn't it? So,
yeah.
You know, so the numbers have always been great. In terms of the atmosphere inside the stadium, inside St James's, it hasn't always been brilliant. So, you know, I know Rafa's kind of very much across this. We've met him a few times. As it happens, he's fantastic. He gets it's like you come out having just had a football education from him, you know.
Yeah.
But so the football, the support, the numbers, fab. But you know, when we're playing Burton at home, supporters are coming to St James's Park saying, "Look, we're Newcastle United. We should be beating these comfortably," etc. And when it doesn't happen, it's like a lot of grounds, I suppose. It goes very quiet and very flat. So there's been a bit of hand-wringing about that. People, the usual things about, why are people leaving early? You know, why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? Don't boo them. The St James's Park sigh. I don't know if you've ever heard, if you've ever experienced that.
I know what you mean.
You know, if something goes wrong, there's this, groan. And you can imagine it must kill a young player. At Newcastle, there's been a lot of discussion about some of the stick that some of the players get, and I've come to the conclusion it's the hardest thing in the world to be a Geordie and to play for Newcastle United. Because we just expect so much from them. We expect them to run faster, tackle harder, shoot more accurately. You know, they're not Peter Beardsley or Alan Shearer. God help them, you're not going to get after them. They're kind of just be an average player, you know. A 6.5, 7 out of 10 player, so it can be a tough place to play for the home team. But I think next season St James's is at its best when we're the underdogs, when it's backs against the wall, you know, and we're playing the likes of Liverpool and Man United and Arsenal and Chelsea, and if it's 0-0 after an hour and we're still in the game, or we're 1-0 up, etc. It's not St James's isn't a better place to be than being in that bear pit when we're still in the game, and you know, we're playing some of the, you know, the so-called leading lights of the Premier League, you know. So it'll be better next season, I'm sure.
You mentioned there that you've had a couple of conversations with Rafa Benitez. I've been lucky enough to speak to him once or twice as well, and it is very much a football and education when you do speak to him. He's a remarkably physical communicator. Is one of the things that I took from it. He once told me how to close down Nemanja Vidic, which I mean I was never going to do, but you know,
things with us, sir.
Yeah. I'm never going to do that, but you know, I know how to do it should the situation ever arise. But
why am I bumming new and weight rules? You never know.
could be happening, but. On that, has he given any sort of indication about next season, or has it been very much just when he's been talking to you, focusing on getting this job done? Because I'm intrigued to see what happens next now with Newcastle. I think that, you know, if Benitez is...
The big thing to remember, lads, is that it's not up to him, you know.
I was going to ask that,
club. You know, it's Mike Ashley's club. So what I believe is that Rafa's got a plan for every different scenario. So, I mean, the fundamental thing before going to that is that Rafa loves it at Newcastle. He loves it. So, you know, it's his club. You know, it couldn't be a more ideal scenario for him because, you know, we love him. We, you know, we've had loads of charlatan managers in the last few years, you know. Graeme Souness being the absolute pits of the earth, or a horrible human being, total scumbag. I wish him every ill will in me, like, destroyed Bobby's team, took a team from 5th to 14th or whatever it was, and then complained about people shouting too much or whatever. Total wanker, excuse me. Great player for you. I detest the bloke. And we've had other charlatans as well, the likes of Pardew, obviously there was for 5 years, never removed his tongue from Ashley's crevice. So, and then you had McClan, absolute clown. So you had all of these people, and then you're like, win the lottery with Rafa Benitez coming to our club, you know. So we need him far more than he needs us. So he's set the context, but at his stage, he wants to manage in England. So he's not going to get the Man United job, is he? Being an ex-Liverpool man, he's not going to get the Everton job, being an ex-Liverpool man. He's not going to get the Spurs job because he's got a decent manager there now. He's not going to go back to Liverpool because Klopp's got that job and he's a good man. So Man City, they've got Guardiola. Chelsea's been there, done that. They've got a decent hand there now, haven't they? So you look at it, all the stars aligned for Newcastle for him to come up. He's told us he liked coming to Newcastle with Liverpool. He joked that he always won. and I'm gonna have to check. I'm gonna have to check that. That can't be right.
Trust me.
Shut up. I've normally left by full time then, but so so the stars have aligned. It's a, you know, I think we're not as big a club as Liverpool. We haven't got that. You know, we haven't got those honours. You know, that makes you a global phenomenon. Like Liverpool and Man United, we haven't got them. You know, people don't buy our shirts in Southeast Asia like they buy Liverpool ones and others. But we are a big regional club, you know, and 52,000 for Burton at home and in the Championship says everything about the love that there is for football and in the Northeast and the love that there is for Newcastle United. So, you know, but a bit of success, you know, Newcastle will be talking about 65,000 seater stadiums and all the rest of it. That's, you know, that, I mean, am I falling into the cliche of being one of these deluded Geordies, by the way, that I keep hearing about. So
I think it's all very reasonable. I have a general issue with this, which is I absolutely hate it when football clubs and football supporters talk small. I mean, I don't want to necessarily pick on your near neighbours, but one of the worst moments of the season remains when David Moyes told everyone that Sunderland to get relegated after 2 games. I just think that football clubs and supporters should always think big and think how, you know, what can we achieve rather than have the first thing that's in everyone's head be how awful are we? So I hate all of that sort of stuff, and you know, I don't think there's anything particularly deluded about pointing out that you do get 52,000 against Burton, but you know, you probably shouldn't be mean to Sunderland about them not having an airport. We don't all need an airport, mate. We don't all need an airport, mate. You know what I mean?
They haven't got an airport, and they haven't got a Premier League club either. So
here we go.
So there's lots of things.
My fault.
There's lots of things they haven't got. Anyway, back on track. Anyway, Rafa. So I think he's got a set of scenarios for whichever money there is available, and I think that's probably a cut-off point where Rafa looks at it and thinks, I think you're taking the piss. I'm not going to stay around for that amount of money. I'll see you. You know, because he's obviously a fool. I think he's not a fool. He loves the club. I think he loves the city. He loves the feeling that there is around the place. And let's be honest, Newcastle and Liverpool are quite similar places, aren't they? You know, in terms of how people rub along, etc.
Yeah.
So he probably sees the same, because I know he loved Liverpool. He talks about Liverpool a lot. So I think he's probably said a similar kind of feeling around the club that there is in Liverpool. But so I think there's a scenario. I think if Mike Ashley says he has 200 million quid, I think Ashley will be able to say, and I want Champions League football, that wouldn't be unreasonable. I says, if he says 150 million, he'll probably be top six. If he says 100 million, top half. If he says 75 million quid, that's probably keep out of the danger of the relegation positions.
Yeah.
Maybe he's have a go at top half. I think if he says 30 million quid and just keep up, be fourth bottom, Rafa will say, actually, I'm not Sean Dyche. I think you need to find somebody who is that person, and it's been nice knowing you. I'm away.
Do you think so? So you think that if he doesn't feel the budget's there, he'll just say that's it for me.
Why would he stay? You know, so
yeah,
he's not a guy who needs to turn your cast into the.
Yeah, he's got nothing to prove, has he? You're right. Yeah, he's got nothing to prove.
No, absolutely. What Rafa wants to have it is he talks about a project. You know, so. You know, he's managed at Real Madrid and Valencia and Liverpool and Chelsea, Inter Milan and Napoli, and you know, so he's done all of that. But what he's never really done since his days at Valencia, I suppose, is put the foundations in for a club that can grow and be much bigger than leave it in a much better position than he found it. And I think not boring you with the last 50-year history of Newcastle United, that's what we've always needed. So, you know, my old man, he's passed away now, but I used to say, oh, what a great club Liverpool are. And my old man would, like, turn his nose up and say, Liverpool, Man United? Well, it's not as big as Newcastle and Sunderland, so, you know. But in the 50s,
yep,
that was true. You know, in the 50s, mid-60s, here's a little fact for you, and it's true. Are any of you lads old enough to remember the 1974 FA Cup final?
Sorry,
absolutely not.
No, right, well, you've won 3 now, you beat Wembley. And that was the first FA Cup final we ever lost at Wembley. When Emin Hughes and Bob Moncur stood in the centre circle and exchanged penance, Newcastle United and Liverpool were level on trophies won.
Video.
In 1974.
That is a good fact, I did not know that.
Right, so this, I mean, I was laughing off how I happened to be, had the misfortune of watching the Leeds lads walk up Barrack Road to the way end shouting, you've never won F all to us, right? And I'm thinking, I think you better need to check the history books. I think you'll find that we've won the FA Cup 3 times more than you lot, and we've won the league more, and we won a European trophy before any of you either. So, you know, so it's a kind of, but it's all ancient history books now, of course. But, so, in 1974, when Emlyn and Bob changed, passed penance, we were level on trophies won. Level.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
So, and that was Shankly's last. 3 minutes later, that had changed. But that was Shankly's last game, remember? So, even despite all the great Shankly, you still hadn't matched us until that game was over. So, if you think about football in those terms, then Newcastle United is still one of the biggest clubs in the country, all potentially, but that's not the word, isn't it? Potentially. So I think we can grow, we can be that club. We've got a strong... Tell us if you think I'm wrong, please do.
No, there's huge potential there.
I completely agree, and I think that's why Benitez has stayed. I think that's what Benitez will be looking for. I'm intrigued by the idea that if he doesn't think he can do it, he'll just think, you know what, it's not for me, and I agree with you. But I'm with you 100%. Yeah. I can eat quite easily.
But think about what Oakland had, right? What Liverpool had, but what Everton didn't, right? So Everton's fine, great club, one of the aristocrats of English football. Sorry, stick with us, they are. Don't cut us off. But they are, right? But what they didn't have in the late 50s, early 60s, is a Bill Shankly figure, did they? Neither did we.
Yep.
They didn't have a Jock, they didn't have a Jockstein, they didn't have a Matt Busby, they didn't even have a Bill Nicholson. They had a Harry Catterick, who was a great manager, but didn't have that kind of charismatic father figure of the club who put the roots in and the belief into the clubs that stood them instead, that fair play to Liverpool, built on it with a lad from Durham, Bob Paisley. So, they've done that. Celtic had Steen, etc., and other clubs have great managers as well. But we've never had that. We've had good managers. Joe Hall was the fine manager of Newcastle.
Yep.
Got promoted, won a European trophy, did well with the, you know, bought very, very well. Some of the players he bought are iconic, you know. Kind of walk in Newcastle even now, and they're old men and are getting patted on the back still. But Newcastle have never ever had an architect of the club, someone who's had a vision and who's been able to implement it and give the club an identity beyond black and white stripes, 52,000 in the ground, aren't they a well-supported club? When will they ever fulfil that potential? That's Newcastle's story now, isn't it? That's their story in the modern. Whereas for Liverpool, it's 5 European Cups, 19 championships, isn't it? So
only 18, mate. Don't wind me up. It's hard enough. This.
So there's all of that history, and Man United have got that as well, you know. So that's what I'm not saying that Rafa Benitez can bring that to the club, but he can set us on our way. He can put the roots in that. I mean, we'll have a decent academy, you know, that will not keep losing great players from the northeast to other clubs around the country, you know, and regretting it. Like, you know, Michael Carrick hanging his boots up, born and bred not 3 minutes from where to have this phone call, you know. So, you know, having a fantastic career, pulled a black and white shirt on. I mean, it's horrific. So there's all of that kind of stuff going on. So I've got, I'm putting immense amount of expectation in Rafael Benitez, but it's not all down to him. It's down to the bloke who runs the tracky bottom.
It will indeed. We're going to have to wrap this up, but I just want to say that you've met him and I've met him, and I know that Rafa Benitez will be putting that same expectation on himself. Thank you very much indeed to Michael. I very much enjoy the sheer enthusiasm behind putting Newcastle in order and moving forward. I'm really looking forward to being back in the top flight next season. I'm of the view it's a shame Sunderland have gone down. I'm not going to let him come back in, but just because I love that derby. So we're going to have another season without it, unfortunately. But listen, thank you very much indeed also to Elliot and Tagito. That's been your 50-50 football this week. See you in a bit.